Welcome to the 43rd Monkey on My Back podcast. Feed your geek addiction at momcomics.com, where you will find an interdimensional portal that, if opened, will lead to the end of the universe. End comics. Tonight on the pod, we talk around our spinning orders and also talk to another very special guest about his very special things that he does. Monkey on My Back podcast, the comic book podcast that's just one more bad day away from going Rambo. There you go, yay. I got through.
Well done, Nick.
I was a bit nervous about that for some reason, I don't know why. So, who's around the table?
Hi, I'm James.
Hi, I'm Jane.
Hi, I'm Nick. And? Hello?
G'day, guys, I'm Ryan.
Is there a satellite delay? I don't know if that happens on phone calls.
I don't know if Australia has satellite connections. We're pretty behind, you know.
You just nearly made James choke.
It's so a man good. With a tin can, a monkey, and a handle that is attached to anything.
That pretty much sounds like what's going on in my head at the moment, and I'm not entirely sure why. Okay, so Ryan is joining us from Australia,
yeah.
Canberra. I'm saying as if I have a clue whereabouts in Australia that actually is. And he'll be talking to us about... I'm actually sounding like a proper radio presenter.
Yeah,
what am
are.
I doing?
What is
Jane's
that?
Looking at me as if I've gone insane.
Yeah, you have a bit.
Forget it. What do we normally do?
We just let him talk.
Oh, okay. Go on then, Ryan, say something.
Something, and I can add some more to that if you like.
No, it's fine. What's everyone been doing?
I can say it's an absolute pleasure.
You can, but you'd be lying at this point. We get to the pleasure.
Well, the listeners don't know that, but I'm sitting here just absolutely hating the fact that I've got to talk to you a lot, but it's fantastic.
That's very nice of you to say so. Are you in Canberra?
Yes, I am indeed. It is the nation's capital, you know, and it is about 0 degrees outside, so we're just starting to get a frost. But for you guys, I've decided to go professional. It's even though it is only 4 a.m. here, I'm sitting here in a suit and tie, and I'm absolutely ready to go.
Fantastic. I quite often like to get up at 4 a.m. and put a suit on anyway, to be honest with you.
No, you don't. That's a complete lie.
No, it's the absolute truth.
Yeah, if nothing, it unnerves your wife a lot, so it's fantastic.
Just stands in the corner of the room, staring at her until she wakes up.
It's generally just the top half, the suit jacket, the tie, the shirt, nothing below that.
His child has all
you,
of this.
You must have visited Australia before, you seem to know.
So, normally we talk about what we've been doing this week. What have you been doing, Jane? It's always a good idea to ask you, get you out of the way as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. It was my birthday on Saturday.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Did you do anything nice? Ryan's dropped something at his end.
I killed zombies.
You killed zombies this week, did you?
Oh. I really did kill zombies.
What sort of zombies? Running zombies? Slow zombies?
They're a mixture.
A mixture.
Yeah, they're fishermen, obese zombies, nurse zombies, doctor zombies.
Why did you look at me when you said obese zombie?
No, I didn't.
Why did you look at me when you said obese zombie, Jane?
I didn't. I was looking at the window to reminisce about killing zombies.
I should warn Ryan and the listener, David, who will be tuning into this. James is feeling a little bit insecure about his weight today, and so if he has a nervous breakdown at any point midway through or starts crying or something, that's probably why. Just ignore him.
Yep.
It'll all be fine.
And
what else did you do?
I had to defeat a pig witch.
You had to defeat a pig witch?
Yeah. And excellent. Also, I'm having a battle to the death with a cherry picker tomorrow.
With a cherry picker?
Yeah. It's been outside our office for 4 days, going beep, beep.
beep, beep, beep.
Beep, beep.
Okay, stop now. Yeah, James, what have you been doing?
I've changed 80,000 nappies.
80,000
nappies. 80,000 nappies. She pees and poos a lot.
Ah.
I've not much else.
Have you been putting food in her?
Yes, but it's milk food.
It's milk food, yeah, and it's coming out.
They don't eat, like, proper food at the moment.
Like burgers and...
No, she doesn't like chips. Burgers. Although pizza she likes. She likes. So she's her daddy's girl.
Has she got any teeth yet? Because that's a bit freaky.
No, she still has no teeth.
She's had teeth for a little while. Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it.
It's still just a gaping maw.
That's such a lovely image. Thank you. I don't really know what I've been doing. I've had a very busy day at work, and we went to Cheltenham to visit my sister, and so there was a house full of Greeks, and it was all very nerve-wracking. Houses full of Greeks are always very nerve-wracking.
Isn't it Cheltenham where the term chav originates from? It's the Cheltenham average, wasn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it came from Newcastle.
No, oh. Cheltenham average.
I'm going to get on Wikipedia.
No, don't do that.
I'm not going to do it now. I'm going to get on Wikipedia afterwards, and we're going to settle this whole... Do you have chavs in Australia, Ryan? Or do you call them something else?
Not really. We've got bogans instead, and I think they're our cultural equivalent. It's just people that sit around. They don't really want work at all, and they speak very, very poorly. Not like myself, obviously.
No, you sound like the posh people we see on Australian soap operas, as opposed to the common people we see on Australian soap operas.
Fantastic. Just the sort of voice acting I was going for this morning.
Excellent. You don't actually say, I haven't seen an Australian soap opera in such a long time, I can't even really remember anymore, to be honest.
Don't bother.
Bogan is... That kind of sounds like an alien-type thing. That's peculiar.
Well, it's not a pleasant term of endearment, that's for sure, and we certainly don't say it as we ruffle their hair and send them on their way with a jaunty little kick. It's more of a very slanderous term.
So it's not very nice. That's not good.
I like it. It sounds cute. I like it.
Because they love being called chavs here, of course.
Yeah.
They are. Actually, we've got the window open here, so I should probably save the class war until a time when we're not in ish.
I'll protect you, Nick. It's fine.
You'll protect me?
Yeah.
You're more, like, nervy than I am.
That's true.
That's no good.
Jane will protect us.
Yeah, I'll protect you.
At the same time, you're going to be talking about a couple of things today, Ryan. You might not remember that. But one of the things is actually a weekly thing. I'm trying to segue really, really difficultly into you talking about Thought Balloon for us.
Well, I guess it does tie into what I've been doing with my week, yes. Mm. Thought Balloons is a comic book writing venture that I came up with a few months back. There's a website you might be familiar with. It's called Comic Twart. Not the most pleasant-sounding website, but it's a bunch of comic professional artists that decided to get together, and each week they would choose a character and then they would all post different sketches on there. And there's fantastic artists on there like Declan Shelvey and Francesco Francavilla, and they put up the most magnificent art every week. And I was looking at it one weekend, cooking dinner while my wife was away, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm not an artist, so I am absolutely terrible with any sort of drawing implement. But I do enjoy writing, and so I thought, is there a possibility we could get some sort of writing equivalent going? And obviously I'm not a professional on the level of those fine gentlemen, but I thought we could maybe try something. And so I contacted a few different writing friends on the internet, and the idea that I came up with was the website that has now become Thought Balloons, which is thoughtballoons.blogspot.com, and Thought Balloons only has one L. Uh-huh. And I thought that would be funny because it's a writing website and we have a spelling mistake in it.
That was deliberate then?
Yeah, well, partially deliberate. That and thoughtballoons.com, spelled correctly, was already taken by someone who hadn't updated since 2006. So that was a bit frustrating. But the premise is each week we choose a character and we take turns choosing that character and we all write one page of script each. Now, our different pages don't need to align and we're not beholden to continuity or anyone's idealization of characterization for that character. We just absolutely swing for the bleachers with our one page. It can be a splash page, it can be the introduction of a story, it can be a complete standalone, it can be anything we like. And so far, we've been running for about 2 months, and we've had luminous characters such as Aquaman and the Blonde Phantom, which was really a lot of fun, an old Golden Age character. We've had Doctor Doom, Mephisto, Molecule Man, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Superman. And we've each taken turns, and there have been some fantastic scripts from the other writers. And every now and then I'll throw up something that doesn't completely suck. And it's really good because we get to comment on each other's work, and it's a really good writing workshop. We've all learnt a lot, and you can even see just in this short amount of time. From at the start, we were all trying to cram as much into our one page as possible. We were trying to write a decompressed six-issue arc in one page.
Yeah,
and it was coming out either looking like one of those Wednesday comics sheets with Wonder Woman that had 60 panels on it, or as if we were trying to be Peo with the Smurfs and fit everything in.
Yeah.
And now we're being a lot more economical, which is a lot of fun. We can see that whether we're getting better or not, we're at least listening to criticism and taking it on board, which is always nice.
It's good. I mean, it's really good to have other writers to sort of bounce stuff like that off of and get proper feedback, isn't it? It's similar to the thing with Elephant Words. You've actually got one of the Elephant Words writers on there, haven't you, Roll, who's absolutely awesome.
Roll, yeah, he's a fantastic writer.
Obviously,
his scripts have been very, very top shelf. He's very smart.
James, he means top shelf as in really good, not top shelf as in pornography.
Not the sort of top shelf that I enjoy in
no.
my quiet, lonely moments.
I think you could enjoy it. I mean, there aren't pictures, but I'm sure
you could. Roll doesn't write any gaping holes or anything like that, so not that top shelf, mate.
No, thank goodness.
Could he maybe include some of that in his writing, do you think?
I'll shoot him an email. He's always open to efforts from outside.
If you would.
I remember, it's funny actually, I read the Galactus ones and the Molecule Man ones, and you had the same issues writing those as James has always had with Superman, because they can basically do anything they want, can't they?
The characters. Yeah, writing a character that's far too powerful. Oh, and I don't like to read a lot of characters that are far too powerful. Most of my characters are usually a relatively plain or even not superhero at all, and I'm hoping that very soon we will be skewing some of our choices to the more independent fare. I know I've got a few opportunities up my sleeve to drop a few sort of Vertigo characters.
Oh, right.
But yeah, writing a character like Superman, that was a struggle for me, because it's a hard choice to know what to do, because they can really do anything.
Yeah, it's hard. I think that's why we all tend to favour the more human, normal stories here, don't we?
Yeah.
But no, it's cool. How long has it been running for now? It's Thought Balloon. It's
been about
a few 2 months
now that it's been running live.
So that's
it seems to be going really well. We keep picking up more readership, and they're commenting, and we've got a nice little community already that's adding their own scripts in the comment section. And they're very, very pumped to offer up their own little fare that they come up with during the week. And it's fantastic to read their stuff and give feedback as well. So I really want to sort of offer up that community where we're hopefully not asking the audience to read too much. It's only one page and it's script type, so it's not really too dense. But we also want to try and get some art on there. So we're looking for people to start drawing those scripts, and we'll definitely post them up and add links and anything like that for free. So I've got a few people that they keep tinkering with things every week, but being the precious artists that they are, it's never good enough, apparently.
Oh, no.
Well, you mentioned a specific art community, but there are loads of communities for artists to sort of, fantasy artists and for comic artists and stuff. It's just more, it's easier for them to do something and for people to immediately see quality or whatever, isn't it? So that it's easier for them to set up their little communities. So it's good that you're providing something for writers, definitely. Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, I thought there would have been something for writers already, and so I did a quick search around, and there really isn't all that much. I mean, there's definitely stuff out there. I won't say I've invented the wheel or anything, but there wasn't a glut of it out there, so I thought we'd be able to fill a bit of a niche comic market, and it seems to have been working out quite well so far, so I'm hoping more people will check it out. Obviously, out of the millions of your MOMB fans out there, I'm sure I'll hit the link and come and enjoy it.
Well, I mean, there's David, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago,
and he can draw.
I'm sure you'll see something from it. Now, Yeah, that you're right. I don't think there's really anything specific for comics. There are a few writing communities for prose and stuff, but it's comics is a side. And you're right, it's easier to read a page of comic strip than anything else, I think so anyway.
I should hope so, yes.
Yeah.
Especially when it's this well written, definitely.
what I've enjoyed about, because obviously I've been on to have a look at it, what I enjoy is, it, obviously you all have your different voices on there. I like the variety there is on there. I'd say the one that I forget who did it, because Doctor Doom was a featured character, wasn't he, a few weeks ago. Who was it who wrote the story about Doom being down on his luck and ended up being a magician on the streets? That really stuck with me.
Oh, being the street performer?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was Max. Max is absolutely hilarious. Yeah, every time he takes a character, it's all about puns. It's all about just seeing how zany he can be.
But it's nice that, because obviously the scripts are excellent, and there's some scripts that you'd expect to see in a comic book, but I like that you've got room for that sort of thing as well. It's a really enjoyable sight.
It was a big reason that I chose a lot of the artists when I initially sent out the call to arms. They've all got a very different writing style, and I knew that each of them would bring sort of something different to the table, whether it was sort of almost slapstick comedy with Max or the high erudition of Roll, and you know, he's leading it into some blue scripts as well, I'm sure, in the future, and there's a few other writers that are a bit more noirish, and it just seems to be that within 1 week we're not going to get the same script for that character every time, and that's really what I want. I want diversity.
Yeah, that makes sense. It keeps it popping for people, and I guess each writer will have their particular fans as well, I suppose, won't they? I did notice some of the writers have actually had like notes of where they would go with the story if it was an actual run in a comic and stuff like that, but others of you have been happy to just deliver the page as is and let people make up their own minds and stuff, which is quite cool. It's very different approaches.
Yeah, I did sort of set the guidelines that we can open it up. If you want to give context to your page, that's fine. If it doesn't need it, then just go for it and just start dropping bombs there. And if you want to sort of give a hint of where it might end up, then, yeah, feel free to sort of key the reader in.
It's big fun. We like it. Do you want to give the address again?
Yep, it's thoughtballoons with 1L .blogspot.com.
Okay, so remember that spelling error. I'm not going to bang on about, but there's a spelling error in there. And that's cool. It's really good. It's a great website, and hopefully it will keep going for
ever.
You are never getting away from that website, Ryan.
That's well. I'm having a son in 2 months, and so I'm going to be training him to start adding scripts straight away.
Excellent. That should work well. That should work perfectly well.
I'm sure I could handle some of the Mark Miller creator-owned characters.
Is this why you're up at 4 o'clock now? You're getting used to that.
Did you hear that, Ryan? Hello?
Oh, sorry, Matt, the audio was just flickering for a second there.
All right, no. James has asked if you were getting up at four in the morning to prepare for having the baby, but you're just mental, aren't you, I think? I think that's...
Yeah, I'm hoping once the baby comes I'll stop writing and stop having to get up early, that's for sure.
Maybe. We can well, I don't know if that's a hope really. You've actually had some writing published, haven't you? I'm segueing again.
I have
you
yeah.
noticed that?
That one was smooth. That was Teflon.
I am a pro at this point now. Not quite as good as Jane is yet,
no.
But I'll get there.
Jane is a real pro.
James, you can't say that.
It's segues, jeez.
Oh, okay. You've had some stuff published in Criminal, some back matter in Criminal, haven't you? Do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yes, I absolutely love that I can say I've been published by Marvel Comics. It's just the best thing in the world. But then, sadly, it means that my writing, when people actually find out about it was an essay for the back of the fantastic comic Criminal. And if anyone's not picking it up, they certainly need to be. And it's written by Ed Brubaker and drawn by Sean Phillips. And it's a straight-up noir comic for those who don't know. And in the back of every issue, Ed Brubaker includes a bunch of back matter. And so I just had an idea to write an essay about crime in Australian film. I'd been watching a few good Aussie flicks that had some very good sort of noir and pulp in them. And so I wrote up a little essay called Australian Noir, and it focused on a few different Australian crime movies. And in the back of Criminal, they encourage you to email in and tell them how much you love their comic. They're absolutely all after adoration. So I sent an email in and just said, oh, look here, I've got an essay that I've written. Feel free to have a read of it if you want to publish it. That'd be great. If it just exposes you to a few new Australian flicks that you haven't seen before, then that'd be great. And I sent that off into ether, and I really didn't think anything would come of it. And sure enough, for a few weeks, nothing did come of it. But then eventually I got an email back from Ed Brubaker himself, and he said, look, we've got somebody writing this month's back matter essay. It's a good mate of mine, so it's obviously, you know, a professional and not some schlub sitting around at 4 in the morning trying to hack out words. And he said, we're set for this month, but he said, I actually like your essay. Perhaps we can use it for next month. So I emailed back, you know, within 8.4 seconds. Yeah, that sounds fine, mate. Anything, very yes, sir. And then he emailed maybe 2 days later, and he's very, very terse in his emails. You can tell he's obviously very busy writing Captain America and the Marvels project and all the other fantastic stuff he does. And he just emailed back and said, my mate missed the deadline. You're up for this month. We'll go to the printer in a week.
And oh, my God.
My jaw just hit the desk. I was very, very pleased, to say the least. And so from there, I started liaising with Sean Phillips, because he was doing the artwork that would match with my essay, and he just wanted to sort of let me know how the proofs were coming along. Very, very nice guy, Sean Phillips. So he emailed me some of the shots that would be featured, and I thought they looked fantastic. One is of Guy Pearce, an Australian actor from the Australian movie The Proposition, and it's just a fantastic shot. That was used as the cover to the essay. And he also did a picture of famed Australian underground criminal Chopper Reid. And so he had these two pictures, and we'd been emailing about them. And so I was talking to my wife, obviously, about this, because like every good husband, I tell her absolutely everything. And so I said to her, look, I think I want to buy this artwork. It's the first time I've been, you know, published in a comic, and it's Marvel Comics, and it's one of my favourite comics. And, you know, I gave her every single reason so that if she were to say no, she'd feel like a real bitch. So I planned that out very, very well. And so she said, yeah, that's fine. Of course, my wife being the greatest female alive, as I like to think, she had no compunctions about buying this artwork. And so I emailed Sean Phillips and said, oh, would I be able to buy the artwork? I'd love to whenever it comes through. And this is where the story gets a bit strange, because then I got an email back from Sean Phillips, but it was from my email account, and I couldn't work out what had happened. So I was talking to my wife about it, and she obviously knows the password to my email address. And she said, oh, I was just so excited about the artwork. I was checking your email because I wanted to know if he got back to you while you were at work. And so I didn't really think anything of it, because obviously I'm a moron, and just went, oh, that's okay. And she'd said, yeah, I accidentally deleted the email, but I managed to get it from the trash file, and I sent it back to you, and so I thought everything was on the square. As it turns out, the email that I got said, oh, look, Ryan, I can sell you the artwork, but probably not for a few months. We need to wait until the arc wraps up. Now, I don't know why that is, but I just took it on face value. What turns out to have happened was my wife redirected the email to her email account, and then she started up a dialogue with Sean Phillips so that she could buy the artwork behind my back and give it to me as our wedding.
Oh.
Yeah, she's awesome. Fantastic. And that's the exact same noise I made when I found out. And so I just thought, oh, I'll bother Sean Phillips, you know, next year when the arc wraps. And then my wife is having this illicit email affair with the famed artist behind my back, and I couldn't be happier for it, quite honestly, because in the end, I think it was the day after our wedding day, and we exchanged gifts. And so, yeah, I had 2 framed art pieces by Sean Phillips and a little card that was attached that said, oh, g'day, Jess and Ryan, congratulations on your wedding. I hope you have a good day. So that was really, really cool.
Oh,
that's really cute.
That is amazing.
And the whole plan relied on you being too dim to notice it was happening, or
no,
assuming
what
she was having.
My wife does a lot of things with the idea that I'll be far too dumb to actually get what she's doing. It works very well for her.
Yeah, definitely. That's really cool. I think Sean Phillips is great as well, isn't he? We know Guy Pearce, of course, because he was in Australian soap operas.
It's Mike.
Oh, no, he's in... And lots of Australian films.
Oh, yeah, he's been in loads of films.
He went out with...
And American films.
Yeah,
the guy has
Oh, yeah,
lots
of
and...
But he does that weird American accent. I prefer him with the Australian accent.
Did you say a weird American accent?
Yeah.
I thought his American accent was quite
it's good. It's good, but have you've seen Priscilla Queen in the Desert?
I haven't seen Priscilla Queen in the Desert, no.
That's the Guy Pearce I know and love.
Aww. See, the thing is, for a whole generation of Brits, he comes from the halcyon days of Neighbours from the mid-80s, when you'd only get to see it if you were bunking off school.
Yeah, people bunked off school specifically to watch Neighbours as well.
Well,
apparently.
No, just because I hated school, but Neighbours happened to be on.
On twice a day when you're at school?
Not to start with, not
They started doing it twice a day. This is probably fascinating for you, Ryan. They started doing it twice a day, Jane, because the head of the BBC at the time, his daughter, was saying, Dad said to him, Dad, we keep having to bunk off in the middle of the day to go home and watch Neighbours. What's that all about? Why have you got it on when all of the kids want to watch it? You know, and they're at school. So then they started doing a repeat. And if you were lucky, and I put lucky in inverted commas, you could actually catch the same scene, because they do a little previously on bit at the beginning. Yeah. Over the course of 2 days, you could catch the same scene something like six times. It was quite bizarre. It was a lucky addiction.
Wow, M-O-M-B, feed your soap opera addiction.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we're all over it now, aren't
we? Move to Channel 5. I don't do Channel 5, so don't watch it.
I left such childish things behind a long time ago.
Not even you don't watch Hollyoaks?
I don't watch any soap operas.
You don't watch EastEnders? No, you don't watch Coronation Street?
Can we stop talking about soap operas?
Yes. Okay. There's a tram crash in Coronation Street this week. I read it in front of a magazine. Sorry.
Do they all die? That's the end of the series?
I don't
know. Because I'd watch that.
I think that series is going to outlast all of us. No, I don't think that's the case. But that's amazing. So on the one hand, you got your published work, which is awesome. But you got a really nice present as well. I don't know what I got for my wedding. A wife.
You look really... Ryan, he looks really disappointed now. I think he's set the
bar. I can imagine him pulling his pockets out and just looking around going, I don't think I got anything.
Pretty much. I think your wife set the bar quite high there, so he's going to go...
I wasn't disappointed until I heard Ryan's story, and now I'm disappointed.
Well, I was really happy, and it also worked out that when we got engaged, and as is always the case, the female gets... something, and all we get is a promise that she'll actually, you know, drop her guard and marry us. And so I complained about that, obviously, and so what she did was she let me spend $500 on Amazon to pick up a bunch of books, which was fantastic.
That's pretty good.
That was a very good engagement present, yes. No other guys I know got anything, and I got a stack of comics, so I was very pleased.
She let you go on Amazon.
James and Nick.
Yeah, notice the wording. Terrible.
James and Nick both look really... sad and hard done by
I'm,
now.
I'm going to have some quite harsh words with my wife when I get home.
Yeah, me too. I'm at home, and actually, she's like really ridiculously. Basically, I was financially and emotionally bereft before I met her, and now my life's okay. So I don't know what I feel so bad about, except I don't have any Sean Phillips art on the wall.
I do.
Oh, you git. James is. I don't.
No, that's two against one. Fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know if we posted a picture of James's wall where his computer is at home, but there's some great. I think some of the art went up on the website, didn't it?
Yeah,
but
did you?
He's got some lovely original art up. Whereas the most I've got is I've got a Fraser Irving page from an authority special he did where the streets of San Francisco look like a vagina. That's all I got, because it was really cheap and it amused me. That's it, pretty much.
Which is interesting, because San Francisco is probably not known for that body part.
Yeah, I think that's the funniest part.
But I'm glad the streets didn't look like the other part that it currently gets used for, so yeah, that's good.
So if they did look like that, I'd have tuned in to watch the streets of San Francisco more often. It'd become my favourite. We should probably talk about spinning order, shouldn't we?
We should. I think we're there. I'm actually going first. I bought a lot of odd stuff today because basically James, James at our comic shop, who you might have heard about before, Ryan, we talk about him a bit, chickened out of going to the bull run in Pamplona.
Pamplona?
Because he was going to be going there, but somebody obviously decided that, like, losing your life to a pack of wild... Are they called... Is it a pack of wild bulls? But yeah. Anyway, so the upshot of it is he was in the comic shop to sell me some weird stuff, which I wouldn't have bought otherwise. So I haven't read them yet, but I've got IDW's The Man with the Getaway Face. which is an adaptation of a Richard Stark story, I think, by Darwin Cook, which is lovely. It's like a $2 book, and it's gorgeous, like oversized Darwin Cook written and drawn book, which is all going to be very noir. I haven't actually read it yet, but it looks gorgeous. You haven't had your comics yet, have you, Ryan?
No, mine come in on Fridays, and that's Friday morning, so I'm all set to head in a few hours and pick them up. But and I think that will be on the list, the one you've got there. Have you read the initial Parker
I haven't. Novel from Darwin Cook? Is it a hardcover still?
It's a small little hardcover. I don't know if they've released it in a paperback yet.
I think I want to get it, but I haven't actually picked it up yet. It's kind of at the end of a list, because there was a little Peter Milligan written noir hardcover novel that came out.
In Vertigo Crime, yes.
Yeah, which I kind of want. There are a few books I want to get, but I mean, it looks gorgeous. I think, James, you picked this up as well, didn't you?
I had it foist upon me.
Yeah, but it's just a lovely, lovely looking book. It's really nice. So there's that. I won't talk about that because I haven't read it. I also picked up this really weird, it's like the Wednesday Comics sort of format, in that it's giant, it folds out to a giant newspaper thing, but it's an indie comic called Pood. P-O-O-D. Pood number one. Cutting edge comics for mature readers. And it's got a lot of independent artists and small press artists that I assume they're small press in the US. The only name I recognise is Jim Rugg. And I haven't had a chance to look at this yet, because I tried to read it earlier on, but it was too big.
You got quite fractious about it, didn't you?
Yeah, my arms were too weak, and there was too much in it. But I'm going to read that later, and that looks really good. It reminds me of I've got a bunch of the there's at least one of the US independent. I'm not looking at the mic while I'm talking. That's terrible. I think it's the Expo, the SPX thing in the US. They normally put out an anthology book, and it looks kind of like that. The work in it looks kind of like that. Really odd experimental stuff, which is lovely. I'm not going to read that. I haven't read that yet. And the other two books I picked up today, I picked up Day Tripper number 8 by Fabio Moon and Gabrielle Barr.
They're in London at the moment.
Are they still in London?
They're still in London.
Yeah, they're waiting for you to go back and see them, Jen.
I will.
Because you didn't go and see them when you had the chance to last week, did you?
I didn't have the chance to. That's the problem.
All of the stars of the comic industry at the moment, all of the rising stars of the comic industry basically want to meet you, Jane, and you shunned them. It's terrible. You could have seen Jamie McKelvey, he was there interviewing them, but no.
All of them except Becky Cloonan, who has put out
a restraining order on Jane.
That's done now.
Because of that whole marriage debacle.
Which I really didn't have anything to do with, which is...
Apart from making the proposal.
You were in the room.
No, you guys made the proposal.
The restraining order may or may not be fictional, just to clarify for anyone just tuning in. But yeah, Day Tripper...
But it isn't.
Day Tripper number 8 is another... great and beautiful and terribly tragic issue in the series that has been great and beautiful and terribly tragic throughout.
So two more to go on that one.
There's only two more to go. So this one doesn't actually have Brass in it at all. He's it's his wife and small son. And he's in contact with them via email, but as a character he's only peripheral to what's going on. Until the inevitable happens in that one. It's beautiful. It continues to be beautiful, but it's, I have to admit, it's a pretty harrowing... Well, not harrowing, it's possibly a bit strong, but it is a pretty downbeat read for the most part, so...
It's very melancholy.
I think 10 issues is probably going to be about right for that series. I don't know if you've had a chance to read. Are you reading Day Tripper, Ryan?
Yes, absolutely, every month, and it just continues to be fantastic.
It does. It's but like I said, this was the first issue where I thought I love this. I still think it's amazing, but yeah, I'm glad that it's not going to go on forever, because I don't think I can continue to see the inevitable happen month on month. No, but it's lovely. It's still gorgeous. But I picked up, because last week I picked up the first issue of Shadowland. And I haven't been reading Daredevil for a really long time. And as a guy who read the Ann Nesenti John Romita Jr. run years ago, and absolutely loved it, and and then read the Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev run and some of Ed Brubaker's. I'm not quite caught up yet. I'm kind of used to him being relatively down to earth. Aside from all of the ninja stuff, he's the guy who stays in Hell's Kitchen.
Ninja.
And doesn't go out into space and doesn't tend to fight the really sort of high-powered characters or anything. And so I've been a bit perplexed at a distance by all of this Shadowlands stuff, because him being in charge of the Hand just almost seemed a stage too far for me. I wasn't really entirely...
I'm expecting big things from this issue of Daredevil.
From this issue.
Because Ryan's Weekly Crisis colleague, Chris, was heaping praise on it.
She was today, wasn't
on
she?
On Twitter. She said it was the best issue she's read for years.
Do you think she was just rubbing all of our noses in it because she had the comics before we did?
No, I don't think
definitely.
She says... Oh, I was going to give it a benefit of the doubt, but, you know, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Ryan didn't hesitate. So.
No, I know her pretty well. She was definitely rubbing.
Damn her.
But,
I'm hoping that'll be a good issue, and I've heard that, and I get the feeling that Daredevil standing next to Shadowland is going to be pretty good, because it's going to look at that. I'm hoping more his ensemble cast and their reactions, and I absolutely love Dakota North as a character, so I'm hoping we'll see a bit more of her in there.
She was in the... she first really appeared again, because she's an 80s character, I think, isn't she? I think that's when she turned up. But she first really appeared during the Bendis run, but I think Ed Brubaker did a lot more with her in the comics that I haven't quite read yet. So
yeah, she focused pretty heavily in the Brubaker run, and she's actually not a bad character compared to the 80s start. And I've read her initial miniseries from the 80s, and oh, it is terrible. It is just really, really, really bad 80s cheese, but well worth the $4 I dropped on eBay for it.
Well, that's at least it was worth the $4. Bendis did a lot of work getting this quite interesting cast around him anyway, didn't he? He brought in Luke Cage and Iron Fist and a lot of the more grounded sort of grounded Hell's Kitchen and New York characters into it, but yes, this is a good issue. I think Chris is right. I mean, I hesitate to say it's a great issue because it's obviously just the first, well, the second issue in what's going to be quite a long and involved story. So while it isn't, there's no filler, there's lots going on in it, but obviously we're still just establishing the tone of it right now. But the art's gorgeous. The art's by, is it Roberto Delator? And Andy Diggle and Anthony Johnston are doing a really good job with the characters. The characterisation's brilliant, which is nice. They're two British boys who've done well for themselves out there, which is lovely. I think it's good. You know what it reminded me of, though? Where I've always seen Daredevil, although he's tied to that location, although he's tied to Hell's Kitchen quite a lot, this, more than anything, felt like, there were a string of disasters that beset Gotham City, and Batman became about all of the horrible things that were happening to Gotham City and how it affected the people on the ground and stuff. There's not that much Daredevil in this issue, as you said. It's mainly dealing with the characters around him and how they're reacting to all of the lunatic things he's doing. I just realised you haven't read it yet, and you're going to, so I'm trying not to say too much about it.
Thank you.
The Scarlet Witch did it.
The Scarlet Witch. Obviously the
or
Scarlet
the Pig Witch.
The Pig Witch now. You can't change the show catchphrase this many episodes in.
I'm just saying all the pit. I'm throwing it in there. I'm mixing it up, Nick. Variety.
You're freestyling. It feels hot. Hell's Kitchen feels a little bit like... I think because as well they're doing things that at least for the next few months actually change the landscape of a place that really exists in the real world. You know, because obviously Hell's Kitchen does exist. So. It's quite interesting seeing what's happening. There's a bit with seeing how the police force are dealing with it and stuff. I think you're going to like it, Ryan.
Fantastic. I'm hoping so, because to be honest, I haven't been absolutely enamoured with Diggle's run so far on Daredevil. And I know a lot of people are sort of saying they think it's fantastic. I found it honestly to be just a tiny bit lackluster, and whether that's because he's following the Brubaker run, which I really liked, and the Bendis run, which is probably the best run ever on Daredevil, in my opinion. I've just found this just seems to be spinning its wheels a little bit, and I'm hoping Shadowland will pick that up.
Bit too decompressed for its own good, isn't it?
Well, the last arc in Japan I thought was a fantastic concept, but then not really a lot did happen over there. It was basically one big continued fight, and then he just leaves. And I thought that was a bit, a bit thin.
Isn't there, obviously, where I haven't been reading the monthly books, all I've been hearing about is Shadowland, and it seems like they've been setting this up for months, really. And the
Diggle's pretty much seeded it in from the start of his run.
And the issue when you're doing something like that is you can't really do, you know, you're basically, again, you're basically establishing stuff. You can't really do anything that isn't to set up the gigantic story you're going to be telling later on. So, yeah, it can be a bit treading water, getting all of the characters in place, which I guess is what he's been doing for the last few months. It doesn't necessarily make it a great read for monthly readers, though, does it, I think?
Yeah, exactly. It's just seemed a bit like it could have been more, and especially because previous arcs definitely have been more. Daredevil's one of those books where every writer challenges themselves and throws themselves out of their wheelhouse at times to great success. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that, that Diggle, with all this build-up, nails Shadowland, both in the Shadowland title and in the ongoing Daredevil title.
What else is being taken in? There's a list. I mean, this is the issue that I've rather stupidly ended up picking up this and X-Men. Some of the X-Men books recently, and all of them have checklists. So there's going to be there's a few books coming out that are part of this that I'm probably going to end up buying, aren't there? Damn it! I don't know why I've done this. I don't know why I do this to myself, to be honest. Okay, well I'm done talking about Daredevil. What have you got, James?
I thought we'd go for something a little bit obscure this week.
A bit different from your norm.
Something a bit indie. Something a bit off the beaten track. It's by two. I don't know if many people will have heard of the creators. It's by a guy called Grant Morrison, an artist called Tony Daniel. The book's called Batman.
No.
Never heard of that book. It sounds ridiculous.
Who is this man of the bat you speak of, James?
Is he a monster of some description? I don't
know. He's a billionaire socialite playboy.
Comics doesn't have a lot of those.
It's really breaking the medium, breaking away from the archetypes usually used in the medium. He's a billionaire playboy whose parents were gunned down brutally when he was a boy, which sent him on a path of vengeance and vigilantism.
Vigilantism.
That's the correct word.
If you had to cast an actor in his role in a film, who would you cast?
Cast, I don't know, maybe Pee Wee Herman.
Mel Gibson. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
Mel Gibson, he's cross, isn't he? He's really cross.
He's a very angry man. I guess,
very cross.
He wants to do horrible things.
Did you know, I didn't even think, I'm sorry Ryan, that's insensitive isn't it, because he's one of your countrymen isn't he, thinking about it.
I was going to say, we haven't mentioned a lot of that, and I was about to keep my mouth closed, that's for sure, but we do call him Australian, even though I think he was born in New York and came here when he was about 5 or 6, but you know, when he's on top of the world winning Oscars, he's the biggest Aussie you will find, but at the moment, he seems pretty American.
I think you're right.
I expect you'll go back to, to having Eric Banner as your figure.
Oh, definitely.
What have you done to Paul Hogan?
I'm pretty sure he's had that many facelifts. We're using him as a drum set.
I'd like to see that.
So I don't think something this obscure would really get a film. To be honest, Jane, it's not.
Okay.
And I've picked up Batman 701. I pick up Batman every friggin' month, so of course I've picked up Batman 701. The reason I'm mentioning it is because this is the beginning of an arc where Morrison's going to fill in the gap between the end of RIP and the point where Batman gets shot with the Omega Ray.
The Omega Ray.
In Final Crisis.
Omega Ray?
You say Omega Ray, I say Omega Ray.
Okay,
let's call the whole thing off. It's nothing spectacular happens in his first issue. I assume he's just setting up what is to come. Essentially, most of it is narration from Batman's Black Case book. So he's talking a lot about his emotions and how he's feeling about being buried and then pushed out of a helicopter as it explodes. Because, again, that very rarely happens in Batman stories.
No, it's always a helicopter, isn't it?
Always a frigging helicopter into the Gotham. But, obviously, there are a lot of large splash pages in his first issue with Tony Daniel on pencils. It looks gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed the Morrison run for the most part. I've enjoyed what he's done with Batman. I enjoyed R.I.P. I know it's divided opinion a great deal. I think we're getting to the real payoff now, you know. This is the point where he's been playing about with the bat for the past couple of years. So I guess we're getting into the bread and butter part of his run. So I assume things will start to pay off here as the return of Bruce Wayne comes to a conclusion as well. So I still remain quite hopeful. I've enjoyed the return of Bruce Wayne. I've enjoyed this issue of Batman. As I say, although not an awful lot happens, it's just Batman returns home, says, "Hello, Alfred, I'm going to sleep off the Joker's toxin
all right.
for a few days. And then I'm going to go off and investigate a god killing."
I wonder why they're choosing to do that now, because the Joker's just come back, hasn't he?
He has, absolutely, yeah. He's Oberon Sexton, wasn't he, in Batman and Robin, which has taken a real turn for the dark for the darker as well. It's that's become a much more enjoyable title for me, anyway. It's been very light-hearted up until now, so it really feels like we're moving into the sort of the end game of the whole Morrison run on Batman. So we shall see what we shall see. But
you sounded almost like you were making, like, not excuses. You sound like a bit defensive about the whole.
I am really defensive because I've read a lot of contrary opinions about what Morrison's doing Batman. For me personally, I've really enjoyed it, especially R.I.P. when read as a run on its own. It's a really enjoyable, really enjoyable story. He's set him in a very dark place, but now I think Batman works best when he's a dark character. He is, you know, the guy's got mental because his parents were going down in front of him when he was a little boy. Of course he's a dark character. I think we're seeing that. So, as I say, I know there's been some sort of fan rage about what Morrison's done with Batman. It's getting to that point where I feel kind of tense.
Just talking about it.
Just talking about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because I desperately want it to all pay off. I desperately want it to come together and to satisfy me. I have no sort of preconceived notion about what Morrison has to do to please me. I just want the story to conclude in a satisfying fashion. So I think for me it's quite an exciting time to be reading the book, but also quite tense, because Morrison's a writer I've got a great deal of time for. It's got to that point where you just don't want him to drop the ball at this point. I don't think he will, but we will see.
Batman's gun is basically like the Han Solo Greedo shooting first thing of the Batman universe, isn't it?
That's
basically
it, yeah.
I think that's where it all comes. I think that's where a lot of it comes from. I don't know. But Fraser Irving's actually kicking ass on Batman and Robin as well, isn't he, as
just,
the artist over there?
Just incredible. The last issue I absolutely loved.
Are you reading any of these books, Ryan? It's kind of difficult because we can't see you. We don't know if you want to say anything before we move on.
No, I don't pick up any DC Universe titles, and not because I'm taking a stand or anything. I just purely, I'm not massively interested. I've read a fair bit of Morrison's run on Batman and definitely enjoyed it, but not to the point where I pick it up monthly, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm picking some up in trades, to be honest, but it's I'm seeing previews of the Fraser Irving stuff and it does look gorgeous. So it's a big universe though, and it's really continuity based, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it is quite difficult to find a way in, basically. Okay, well, I think
before we move on though, just a personal note, I forgot to pick up on my R Weeks. I just wanted to thank our listener.
Which listener?
David,
what did he do?
Oh my god.
David's a very, very nice guy. And he sent me a drawing this week congratulating me on the birth of Scarlett, although my contribution to it was minimal.
sent me
a very nice picture of the Punisher and Batman. Basically telling me to do a good job as a dad or he'd send them around to kick my ass.
All right.
So I just wanted to say thank you to David personally.
That's quite cute. He didn't do anything for Nikki then?
Hey?
Well, he didn't do anything for your wife.
He
made her husband happy.
Oh, and threatened him.
Yeah.
Okay. I changed the nappy. As soon as I opened it up, read it, I went and changed the nappy.
Oh, that's really cute.
So thank you very much, David. You're a great man.
Bless him. He is good. He's a very big... He's a big man, and he's got a big heart.
And he just... He's a good lad.
Yay.
Yeah.
That's heartwarming and lovely. Let's move on to Jane's review.
Yes.
What did Jane get?
I've bought sweets.
What's that? I don't know what
just
that is.
Sweet.
You didn't buy sweets because you didn't
share
them.
Today. I'm going to skip to the sweet shop. No, I bought the comic sweets.
What is the comic sweets? I don't know what it is.
It's the comic sweets. I'm going to tell you about it, Nick.
Okay,
is it an image book?
Yes, it's 1 of 5. It's a New Orleans crime story by Cody Chamberlain. I bought this for 2 reasons. One, because I was hungry.
I was hungry about it.
Because I didn't understand the pain I was in. I was so hungry, I was going to faint.
Because we've never experienced hunger previously.
No, we wouldn't
and,
understand
And not to
like.
The degree I've suffered this afternoon. And Nick was actually rearranging books in the comic shop, I swear, just to me.
Was I rearranging books again? I'm sorry, it's an old habit that I don't even realise I'm doing.
She's overselling this. By her own admission, she had lunch today. How hungry can a human...
I had my lunch at 10:30 this morning.
So that's... You had your lunch at brunch time. That's okay. What did you have?
I don't have breakfast. I had 2 bananas, a peach and 2 packets of crisps.
2 bananas?
Yeah.
A peach?
Yeah.
What was the other thing?
2 packets of crisps.
And that was it. That's all I've eaten today.
That's plenty. I had a panini and the man didn't even smile when he gave me...
My wife smiled when I made my lunch, so I suppose I'm miserable. Anyways, I was starving. Also, James in the comic shop was going, has one of you picked up this? And
he's basically a pimp, isn't
yes,
he? He's
he
a
is.
Dealer.
But I'd already beat him to it. He's already, you know, got me addicted.
I believe they call it selling up.
Of course, it doesn't really matter what the comic's like, because if there'd been a comic called Donuts and it was shit, you'd have bought that instead.
Probably would have bought it as well.
Anyway.
Yes, it says what it is what it says. New Orleans crime story. It's part one, so I keep picking up part ones of everything. So it's going to be...
Get a standing order.
I've written it out. I need to add this to it now.
All right. Well, that's relatively easy.
I know.
Tweet him. That's how we do everything now, isn't
it? Yeah, I'll do that. It starts off with... I know we're not going to do page by page, but this one I had to talk about. Is somebody's making... Mm-hmm. They're making sort of praline candy.
Praline.
Praline.
Praline. Praline. That's not right, James.
Praline. It is. It's like a window still.
He was a chef.
James
is a chef, sorry, not Ryan.
Never trust a chef.
Anyways, and it's really strange. It's a very strange and intriguing comic. There's at the beginning there's somebody baking sweets, and then there's somebody getting murdered.
Murdering sweets, that's good.
And then there's, you know, some detectives, then there's some children, but the
not children detectives.
No.
Okay.
Just detectives, then children.
Like the Red Herring Gang, yeah?
Yeah. And then there's a scientist. And then...
Mad or normal?
Oh, she's borderline.
Yeah. But is she mad as in does mad experiments, or she's just, like, bipolar or something?
Probably both.
Oh, okay.
Is
that your official scientific opinion?
Well, it's on the basis of this comic, so so it's very scientific. So there have been some murders, and this... A candy's been left at each murder, and they're trying to sort of figure out what this is all about. And with the children, and sort of, there's a really, really short scene in this, and the artwork completely changes style, which threw me.
It's really cartoony.
It's
and kiddie.
Really strange. Right in quite tense, slightly actually quite sad scene, and then you've got this weird cartoony blue and green. Sort of scene with some children and their alcoholic mother driving away. I don't want to give too much away, but my guess is there's something happening with some sort of disease. That's
all right,
I can say. but this, I don't know how this ties into the murders or anything like that. So it is really intriguing. The artwork, sorry, I haven't really given the story justice. It is, but it is a very much setting the scene.
Is it supernatural or is it?
I don't know yet. This is it. It's like I said, it's really intriguing. Every character is left so open ended that,
but it's like a thriller so far.
Yeah, so far, it's a very setting the scene first issue. You're getting to know a lot of characters, and there's things that have happened in their past and things that obviously going to happen in their future, which you kind of want to find out about.
Unless they get killed. Although that will happen in their future.
Yeah. Well, they'll die in their future.
Nothing else will happen in their future after that.
Well somebody might do something to their corpse.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I was thinking about bringing it back to life.
It's pretty.
Yeah, the artwork is amazing on this.
It is nice.
It just, but the changes. I mean, the first two pages where the recipe is being read out is this sort of really sort of beautiful tea stained caramel and sort of greeny grey colours, and then the next scene is black and white.
Mm. There's a lot of a lot of work's gone into that, and a lot of attention to.
But he writes, Curly Chamberlain writes and does the art on this, so it's all him, and that's.
Is it all the art? Is he colouring
everything? Inks. He's done lettering, all of it. The only thing he didn't do was proofread it.
Proofread it. That's rubbish.
I think he got somebody else to do.
Is it even spelt right? Sweets. Is it spelt right on the front? Yeah.
No, it said sweats.
You sometimes get quite a lot of nice attention to detail and storytelling and stuff if one person's doing everything.
I mean, obviously he's written and drawn it, so the art and the story just go just perfectly, absolutely perfect. Each scene goes perfectly, even the crazy blue and green scene with the kids, it all goes, it all fits in, and that's what's really intriguing about this comic.
So. Actually, I wish I'd picked it up now.
So thank you, James.
Just steal James, it's all right.
Yeah. Gorgeous, isn't it?
It was good. I'm pleased.
So you're recommending that?
I am recommending it because Demo left a hole in my heart. So
you should get that scene.
No,
there's things they can do with modern surgery.
Now, Jane, I'm on the fence about picking up Sweets, and I think it does look interesting, and the concept sounds actually really, really good about that crime right before Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about picking it up today, but I want to know, are you just giving your usual very, very nice review, or is it worth picking up?
It's worth picking up. No, it's worth picking up.
Not to discredit you as a comic critic artist, but...
I'm nice on here. There are certain things I've picked up that I haven't been so nice about.
Yeah, you want to hear when we don't
let her talk about stuff that's got her in a rage. It does. Certainly art-wise, it isn't just pretty. It's like the storytelling's really good in it. I can vouch for that just from looking at it, because it's fairly clear what's going on.
And if nothing else, you get a handy recipe for some nice hard candy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, but, I'm a primary school teacher. We generally don't peddle in homemade hard candy.
I don't know what's going on anymore. Do you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the guy who's doing Joe the Barbarian, Sean Murphy. And in other places it looks kind of different. It looks a bit like Rob Guillory and Chew. So
it's there are some influences that come through on there.
I can see it's always worth being wary with,
Jane.
With any books, really, though, isn't it? Because as we said about the websites earlier on, it's not easy to make a good looking book, but it's easy to hide not such great writing in a good looking book. Basically, I'm doing stuff with my hands, and now James is mocking me. I'm Greek. I can't help it. All right. And now he's just sticking his fingers up at me.
Which works really well on the podcast, doesn't
English,
it?
It's all got really tense at this end, right? Mm. And I can't tell you.
It hasn't.
There's going to be a standoff. It's going to get nasty. Can I just ask, are you hearing... Have you heard my dog when she's come up and started whining at the door at all, no. Ryan? Oh, excellent. Okay, so it won't come up on the podcast. I'll just edit me saying that out. Yeah, it'll all be fine.
It's good. Again, okay, it's good job we don't address these things.
Yeah, right? I know. I think it's good that we just brush them over.
Totally.
I think it's worth picking up, Ryan. At least have a look through it and decide. But it is a scene setting first issue.
Just read it in the comic book shop. Yeah. Self a couple of bucks. Be fine.
That always helps, yes.
But it does. It's John who does that.
Yeah.
He goes into bookshops and reads books.
We're brilliant about that. He's on next week.
Excellent. I won't be here.
But I think it is amazing that he writes and does the artwork himself, and like I said, it changes an awful lot through the issue, which was a little bit sort of, oh, this is weird, but at the same time it works as well, so a lot of love has gone into that comic. I think
we need to find some other artist writer combination books for you, because there's loads of really good stuff. I was thinking a bit of Sam Keefe. I was thinking way back to the beginning of Image, where Sam Keefe was doing the Max, when I was looking at that and hearing you talking about it, because you end up with something, it's not always good, but you end up with something that's very individual, because they don't have to explain, as a writer, they don't have to explain what they're doing to the artist, and they can try things out and experiment, but quite often it ends up being incomprehensible as well, so it's sort of, it's kind of funny. It's kind of interesting to see what happens with that sort of thing.
That's
Ryan totally called you on that. That amused me.
Thank you for that, Jane.
That was brilliant.
Yes, thank you, Jane. I do love your reviews. They're always just so fantastic.
Some of the stuff I've brought that I don't talk about on the pods.
We should let her.
We should
do a Jane Unleashed episode.
We'll do that then.
Which is just Jane doing the interview. We at the very beginning of the at the very beginning when we first started, we decided, didn't we, that we were mainly going to talk about, like, we were going to be positive, and we were only going to talk about books specifically that we liked, I think, weren't we? And there have been weeks when James has really struggled with that because he hasn't liked any of his books.
I do kind of like that aspect of this pod where it is a bit more upbeat and a bit more fun. Although, James, you just had a fantastic idea. If you rename this podcast Jane Unleashed, pretty sure you'll get a lot more people hitting it.
Actually, no, that's true. Maybe we should do special episodes.
For the video podcast.
God, it's like being at school.
Was it like this at school?
You were unleashed at school?
No. There was a very popular website that had my name in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
No,
it wasn't me, because that would be illegal. No, but
what popular website? I don't know. You're being really vague.
Was it called Jane Unleashed?
No.
Oh. Was it called Jane Gone Wild?
No.
Was it called Jane Cam?
Was it called Sorority Jane's Go Buck Wild on Cam?
No, I think Nick might have guessed it.
Jane Gone Wild.
I was hoping it'd be Tarzan in Jane.
No! Damn.
Oh, win. Dear.
Right, no.
Will you give me the URL before I go home?
Nick's already said it, so listen back.
Jane Cam.
It's
Jane Cam.
Like that.
Jane Cam.
It's like that.
Jane. Jane Camera. Jane Webcam.
Sounds like. How many syllables?
It's the name I don't like being called.
Jamie Cam.
Yeah.
Is it .com or a .org?
I can't remember. I don't know if it's still going, but it was very popular at school and I got teased because I had the same name. I was the only Jane in my school.
I can't remember how old Ryan is, but James might feel this a little bit. When people talk about being at school and there being websites, I always have this weird schism in my head. We didn't have the internet when I was at school.
We had a BBC
computers.
We had a BBC Micro in my school.
I think we did, actually, and I had a Spectrum at home. Yeah. But no internet. Oh, my goodness, no. The thought that you could look at pictures of naked ladies back then was like some crazy dream.
This is turned into a horrible nostalgia. I'm not enjoying this. I think that's it. Spinning order's done.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to mention, before we move on, I just want to mention it's one of those crunching tone changes that we seem really good at. We won't go on about it, but Harvey Pekar died this week, and it was very sad. He was, well, I guess he was a pioneer, pretty much, wasn't he? He's a comic diarist, I suppose. I mainly know him because of the film that came out a few years ago. I've read a lot of his stuff since the film came out, but looking around the internet at some of the comic artists and writers I follow and encounter on there, and a lot of the comic fans, it's obviously, like, he's obviously been very influential, even if he was never really as famous as he could have been or as successful as he could have been. So I'm very sad that he died, and I think there's a couple of tribute pages that are going up. There's a tribute group on Flickr that's going up And we'll probably share the links to that on the site. So we watched American Splendor here last night because Amy hadn't seen it.
You and your wife, not all three of us.
No, not all three of us, again. And I just think it's... I don't know how accurate a depiction of his life was necessarily, but there are a lot of diary comics and journal comics that are maybe a bit self-indulgent that have come out of that, but there's also an awful that have come out of being inspired by him, but there's also an awful lot of good stuff around that I think we maybe wouldn't have seen if he hadn't gone there and sort of opened up the mundane lives for not entertainment, for elucidation and enlightenment to us. I don't even know what elucidation means. I don't even know if it's a word. Is that a word?
Sounds pretty.
It definitely is a word, yes. It means explain and open up.
Oh yeah, well then that's good. There was a redundancy in there.
But it was Greek. Yes.
You thought it was Greek? But yeah, I mean, I don't know if any of you guys are really like massively familiar with his stuff. And like I said, I can't pretend that I've been reading Picard's stuff since I was a kid, because I haven't. But if you get the chance to watch his film or pick up the trade, there's a couple of trades of his stuff. You really should. He's very good.
No, I don't know much about him at all, to be honest. But I know he collaborated, didn't he, with Robert Crumb?
Yeah.
From time to time, I know Robert Crumb's work, but his I wasn't familiar with. So maybe it's another one of those cases that someone's death inspires you then to go back and look at their work, which is, you know, it's bittersweet, but I will now. Obviously, I want to pick up American Splendor and look through that. So.
Just seems like people are dying left, right and centre at the moment.
Yeah, it happens an awful lot.
No, but I mean, Al Williamson wasn't that long ago either, so I guess these guys are pretty old, so...
Since we started this podcast...
It's John.
It is John.
It's John.
Okay.
All deaths blamed on John.
Blamed on
John? Yeah, especially celebrity deaths. It started with Heath Ledger.
Oh, dude.
You think? You had to bring up Heath Ledger.
That's a bit of a sore point in Australia.
Yeah,
Jane.
Yeah. Oh, Jane.
I love Heath Ledger, though.
We can tell from the way you just laughed.
Some cultural sensitivity.
I'm not even allowed to talk about it in passing in front of Amy. She's still gutted.
Yeah, I was gutted. I blame John.
It is all John's fault.
These guys all work together as well, so there must be a bit of an atmosphere whenever she's around John at work. Is it not good?
Sexy atmosphere. It's lovely.
A sexy atmosphere of resentment.
Oh, I find hate and bitterness.
Sexy.
Arousing. I can't help it.
It's the British condition. I think it's the English condition. Mm. See, we English men, we do find...
Oh, loathing. Oh, it's lovely.
Loathing and disappointment.
Yeah.
Are like an aphrodisiac. I'm sorry, Ryan. We went somewhere else there for a second.
No, that's perfectly fine.
So yeah, if you get a chance to look up any of Harvey Pekar's stuff, you all should possibly.
We will.
It won't be everyone's cup of tea, incidentally, but it was mine. Now I want a cup of tea.
No, I want a cup of tea.
Sorry.
I want to hear about Sword.
Okay.
Ryan.
Fantastic segue again.
That was fucking awesome,
Thank
wasn't
you.
It? Well done, James. You're going to talk to us about Sword, Ryan.
Excellent. All right, so I've got the spotlight this week, and we're looking at Sword from Marvel, not the Sword from, I think it's Image. Sword was started up at the very beginning of this year, and it's interesting because I'd actually written an article maybe a month before it was first solicited, and I was discussing whether Marvel should do their version of Wednesday Comics, and one of the options that I gave was a... Agent Brand and Beast Lovers of Sword strip, and then within a few weeks it was solicited that the series was going to come out, so I was absolutely on board from the very start.
You're ahead of your time.
Oh, I'm pretty revolutionary, but yet I'm stuck here shackled in Australia like the criminals that you wanted to offload.
Oh, is it too soon?
Oh, no.
Perhaps.
I had to wait. I mean, it's only been 200 years, but you know, we can still bring it up. But back to Sword, it's written by Kieran Gillen, who is more on your side of the pond than mine.
Oh, yes,
and it's drawn by an American artist, Stephen Sanders. And It ran for 5 issues, and apparently it was the order to cancel it came down before people actually bought the first issue, based on just sales orders. It already was deemed not good enough. And so they were nice enough to at least let Gillen and Sanders finish off the opening arc. And luckily they were very aware that launching a series about a subgroup within the Marvel Universe that's not exactly massive, and having a lead character in Agent Brand, who'd only appeared in a handful of issues before then, most notably being Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men run. But obviously it had Beast from X-Men, but he's not usually one to carry a title. And so they understood that going in, and so they did set up the series so that they could end it pretty roundly at the end of that first arc. Have any of you guys read Sword?
Oh, yeah. We've actually, I think, I reviewed quite a few of them, and I think, James, you just read it,
I read it today.
Yeah. I did not know that. I did not know that they'd cancelled it based on pre-orders, which is even more brutal than I had thought.
Before it actually hit the shelves, they knew they were going to have to cancel it, which is just pretty average, quite honestly, and especially because it was such a fantastic series. The writing in it is really, really top shelf. Gillen manages to pack a lot into each page, dialogue-wise, and he stated it a lot, so it's a bit cliche to say it, but he basically wanted it to be very His Girl Friday, with staccato dialogue flying between the two leads. But the interesting part is that he really reversed the genders, and that Beast is more the sort of the gushing bride, and Agent Brand is very, very harsh and cold, and it makes for a good pairing.
Beast's a big romantic, though, anyways, and he has been like that. He's characterised as being a bit like that, anyway. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But you say that there's a lot. You say that there's a lot going on each page, and there is, but it never really feels rushed or hurried, does it? I don't think, especially considering how much they cram into that five issue run.
Yeah, I thought they set the tone and pace of it just phenomenally well, and sadly the sticking point for a lot of fans was the fact that Stephen Sanders decided to draw Beast in a different way. That was what riled them up, it would appear. He gave him more of a sort of snout sticking out the front, and he said it was sort of an homage between what Quietly had done with Beast on New X-Men with Morrison, and also looking at the dragon in Bone.
I hadn't made that connection, but yeah, definitely.
He said, because I interviewed him for the Weekly Crisis, which is a comic news and reviews website that I write for. It's weeklycrisis.com. That's weeklycrisis.com. Very good. I've been subliminally whispering it. You probably haven't heard of it. It's in the backdrop.
We'll hear it in the mix later.
But I interviewed Stephen Sanders, and I still sort of chat to him here and there, as much as you can with anybody on the internet, quite honestly. And he said at the time that he would just get an email saying, "Oh, your Beast looks like shit, dick face," and that would be it. It's not even really constructive criticism, and so he's an adult, so he can deal with these sort of slings and arrows. But it's a bit of a shame to see that turned people off, when overall it was a really, really well-drawn series, and the writing was good. And the story basically is that Beast becomes an agent of S.W.O.R.D., and when he goes up there, and S.W.O.R.D., I should say, for those who don't know, is the intergalactic version of S.H.I.E.L.D., so it's sort of like a space spy organization, which just sounds absolutely wicked from the outset.
Yeah.
And when they get up there, Henry Peter Gyrich, or Gyrich...
Yeah, he's
he's an ugly little man with a very square head, and so he's been assigned as co-commander next to Agent Brand, and he's there straight from the get-go to sort of derail things, and he sets up a bunch of situations where Brand and Beast will be kept very busy, and he then tries to undercut S.W.O.R.D. by making them look silly, and also trying to evacuate every alien being from Earth, which must be difficult, but he almost manages it, which is very interesting to watch. There's a stack of cameos in there. My favourite one definitely being Beta Ray Bill. I'm a big Beta Ray Bill fan.
Yeah, I think for British comic fans, Death's Head was, although he's not one of the aliens on Earth, Head was a bit of a major league thing, because he was a Marvel UK creation.
He was in the Transformers comic, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And he kind of made, when Marvel tried to launch a sort of a UK line, he was one of the few real success stories that came out of it, and he made it into a few of the American comics. So yeah, he's and Gillen's taken his speech patterns, and his speech pattern's really something that people remember really well. He's a really fun character. So Yeah, so there are a lot. I mean, there are a lot of cameos. He definitely has fun with the Marvel Universe, doesn't he? That's something that's come up with the other comics that I've been reading, the Thor and the New Mutants issue he did and stuff like that. But it's funny. I read an 80s couple of issues of the Avengers from the 80s, and basically I think they were the 80s or early 90s, and that's basically what Henry Peter Gurick's function is in the Marvel Universe. He's been around for decades, and he's basically a company stooge or government
that
stooge.
That is the best way to explain him, definitely.
Yeah, who comes in and just like fucks things up for the sake of being authoritarian and annoying. Norman Osborn actually turns up, but the interesting thing is it doesn't require any, although it ties into stuff that's happening in the rest of the Marvel Universe at the same time, you don't need to be reading anything else to read Sword, do you? I don't think.
No, definitely not. They structured it very well that it stands alone, and it's completely satisfying on its own. And even if you didn't know who some of these other characters like Death's Head were, or they introduce a new character in Agent Brand's brother, mm-hmm. you can still enjoy it fantastically on its own.
Do you think that, because it's kind of notionally part of the X-Men school of Marvel Comics, and do you think that maybe maybe the sales expectations were led by the fact that it was part of that? Because I can't imagine it selling so poorly compared to some of Marvel's other titles, but I wonder
spun out of Joss Whedon's run, and I think they were maybe aiming for, I don't know, something not obviously on his level, but hoping to cash in on some of the credits that it would be associated with him. And it really didn't. I mean, the first issue launched with just over 20,000 sales, and it dropped about 6,000 or 7,000 by the second issue. But even then, the first issue, Marvel knows going in what the depreciating returns are each month.
Yeah.
And so once they saw that was the initial order, I believe the mandate was just given, well, after an arc, they know it's going to be around 10 or 11, and I believe that's what it was, so didn't really work out so fantastically for them, which is a real shame. I'm hoping a lot of people check out the trade that's available now. I'm pretty sure it's listed as Astonishing X-Men Sword, so they've tried to sort of tie it more into that X franchise.
It is, yeah. It comes branded as an X-Men book in trade, because I picked it up in trade after Nick's recommendation. I think you're right. It is a shame, and something we were talking about before the pod, which is a constant frustration of mine, is how earnest and how navel-gazing some mainstream books seem to have, I won't name any names in particular, Captain America, have become. But it's just such joyous, riotous fun. But it's still, panders nicely to a mature audience. There's a lot of mature humour in there. But it's just so much fun. It's what I... There aren't enough mainstream comic book hero titles that do what Gillen managed to do in Sword, which was, you know, a nice solid story that had some good quality action, good quality character development, quality interaction between them. But it was just great fun as well, you know. It never took itself too seriously.
It was one of those few comics I felt you got your bang for your buck every month, because you were sure to get a good solid 22 pages of action and not just sort of filler for the trade, which was really nice.
Yeah, definitely
works brilliant. Having read it as a trade, though, I mean, it works brilliantly as a collected as a collected piece as well. It's fantastic. I zapped through it in almost no time today. It was really,
and it's got a very nice ending on it. I think the ending is actually quite sweet.
Yeah, absolutely, it's lovely.
But, you know, I was crying through the ending those few months ago that I can't actually remember now. It's just a really nicely rounded book, and I think it's funny because Kieran Gillen seems to be really hitting his stride on a couple of more. Well, so is he just writing Thor at the moment, or
at the moment? I think he's just wrapping up his Thor run, but yeah. The San Diego Comic Con is on in a week, and I'm assuming there will be an announcement in regards to him, because nearly everything he's done for Marvel has, if not sold massively, always been critically acclaimed. Before the Sword run, he did a Beta Ray Bill God Hunter miniseries, which I read recently, and it's Beta Ray Bill tracking down Galactus hoping to kill him, and it's a fantastic little concept, and it's executed very, very well. So I know he nailed on that. There was the Dark Avengers tie-in Ares miniseries that he did. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I haven't read that. It's about the only thing of his I haven't read. And from all accounts and all reviews, it was very good. And it's three issues as well, which is a nice short little punch. You can sort of affordably put it into your budget. Mm-hmm. And I noticed the same thing. I picked up his recent Thor, his first Thor trade recently. And his opening arc was only three issues, which I think is just the perfect way to start a new creative team on a title. Give them three issues to prove themselves. That way, the people who are coming off of J. Michael Straczynski, they don't have to commit too much time or money to it. They can sample his work, and they can see if it's up their alley or not. And if a writer or a creator can grab you within three issues and deliver a whole story, I think they're absolutely worth following. And it was the same with Jonathan Hickman on Fantastic Four. He opened with three issues, and he came swinging out of the gates. He was fantastic.
So interesting that you say that about Thor, because I keep being told that I thought his final issues were going to be a few months ago. I keep being, because I don't really follow the news very much, and I keep being told that he's finishing, and then there's a few more issues coming out from him, which I'm quite enjoying actually.
Yeah, they said Matt Fraction was taking over, and then it kept getting pushed back a month and back a month, and I think it's ended up being pushed back maybe five, maybe possibly even 6 months. And so Gillen obviously is just a dead-set legend, because he just keeps sort of stepping up and saying, well, I'll give you another issue, and all right, I'll give you another short arc. So he really needs to be praised for his ability to work within the very shifting dynamic situations that Marvel are throwing at him. Mm. So if they don't give him an ongoing, I think they're absolutely crazy.
Every one of his books is so different as well. I mean, I think that's the thing. Thor is so different from Sword. Although it's still got all of the value for money in it, there's still lots going on and you're still getting the epic storylines. It's like almost... well, he's obviously, if you're writing a book about Asgardian gods, it should be different from
the space book you're writing.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, they're just completely different in tone, and I really like it. I really like his stuff. You've read Phonogram. You've read the second Phonogram book as well, haven't you?
Yes, I recently picked up both Phonogram trades, and the first one is quite good. I definitely enjoyed the story. It's about a phonomancer, which is basically sort of like a music magician. And it's all about Britpop. And I don't know a lot about Britpop. I'm not a big sort of music person, but I don't feel you need to know anything to go into this story. It really just sort of spells out anything you need to know, and purely in context and through great writing, it works. And so the first trade of that was definitely good, but then I read the second trade, The Singles Club, which is seven standalone sort of vignettes all set within the one night, and it's from everyone's different perspective of what happens, and that trade is absolutely phenomenal, and perfectly. It also stands alone. I don't think you need to read the first trade to get and love and understand the second trade at all.
I've heard really good things about the second trade. I didn't really get on with the first one, but I think looking at it, McKelvey's art's just getting better and better, and I like the structure. I mean, we've talked a lot about Demo. I don't know if you've been reading that, but
I haven't picked any of that up yet. No.
Yeah, we loved the sort of standalone nature of that, and the second Phonogram book sounds like a... I've pronounced it differently every time.
It's good.
kind of seems like a mix between that sort of standalone stories, and I quite like the fact that the stories actually intermingle with each other and connect to each other as well. So I'm going to have to pick that up when I've got a bit of spare money, I think.
Sounds good.
I think it'd definitely be worth your time. And the cool thing is that while they focus on a different character each time, it's also a very different storytelling technique that he uses almost in every issue. And he nails the voices of all the different characters. You've got sort of this 18-year-old young poppy girl, and then you've got the DJ who sort of hates everybody who thinks they know about music. And he just... There's such variety in there that you'll find one issue that you will absolutely love, and the rest you will really like.
Mm. That's cool. We'll have to pick that up. Yeah. And I think James is going to have to lend Jane Sword as well, because she hasn't read it yet.
I think she should buy it.
I was thinking about, because obviously you were talking about Nick and Ryan saying it just works so well standalone. The only thing I worry about is when it comes to Marvel and DC mainstream characters, that I'm not really into it. So if I do pick up something you guys are really enjoying, I don't understand who the characters are.
Swords, you can go and completely help.
Yes. So I think that will appeal to me. So yeah.
Actually, another thing I mentioned a bit when I was talking about the issues is traditionally I do not like spacefaring books, especially not the Marvel space saga books.
The cosmic side of things. Yeah.
Generally, if a series I'm following and characters I'm following go out in space, I mentioned it when I was talking about Daredevil earlier on. If characters do go out into space and become part of that whole milieu, even for a few issues, that's normally when I stop reading a book. I don't know why, I've just never been able to check into it. So I was pleasantly surprised that Sword isn't even like that. It's not like that at all, and it isn't mired in all of that continuity. Most of the races, I think, that there's mention of other stuff that's going on in the Marvel Universe, but I think he invents most of the races completely brand new as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he created a few new ones, and there's those big, I can't remember what they're called, James, you might remember, the big monolith. They look like walking termite mounds.
Yeah, the rocks, that's it. No, I can't remember. I only read it today, and I can't remember already.
You've got mumnesia.
Yeah, I have.
Mumnesia? Is that a thing?
It's a scientific thing.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It is. But I don't think daddy's can get it, but we'll just say James has got it.
Dadnesia. I can't remember. No, they are fantastic.
They're really cool. They're really cool, and I think the main bad guys in it are brand new as well, aren't they? So, no, it's good. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And
they also
great.
Said that if the trade sales are good enough, they might, who knows, cross your fingers and, you know, pray, they might be able to revive the ongoing if there were to be enough demand. So, yes, Jen, go out and buy one.
I will buy that,
All the rest of you little mom kiddies, go out there and just find your mother's purse. Don't let them know. I'm saying you can do it, and I'm a primary teacher, so that's okay. Go out and find the purse, grab the money, pick yourself up the trade copy of Astonishing X-Men Sword.
Okay, so that's David and Chris. We'll have to go find them.
I heartily endorse that.
Yeah, I endorse that. They're only going to be spending the mum's money on drugs or
alcohol
anyway, so they might as well spend it on this. We'll be seeing Kieran Gillen will be among the many other people we see at the Thought Bubble, which I have to be honest, I don't know if you caught this, Ryan, when we first mentioned your site, when I first mentioned Thought Balloon, I kept referring to it as Thought Bubble because I'm stupid the whole way through, because we're quite excited about this convention that we're going to, so
that's okay.
So we will pass your adoration and love on to Mr. Gillen, if you haven't done it already over the internet.
Oh, please do. That'd be fantastic.
We will do that.
Cool.
Anything else? Was there any other news or anything this week?
No.
Anyone?
I've been living in a bubble, Nick. I've got nothing for you.
Nothing.
I'm a dry well.
If I ask you what you're doing this week, James, is it going to be I'm going to be looking after
nappies,
the baby?
Nappies.
Lots of nappies.
Now I'll make some formula up as well from time to time. Take a bit of heat off Nicola.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Well, I can't produce it myself.
I know.
You can't produce the milk?
No.
You could try.
Oh,
and
I
can only produce cuddles.
Thank you, Jane. That should really take my mind off all the nappies and the milk.
For the baby, James.
For
I don't think she means for you.
Oh, God, sorry.
Not
God,
you.
It's embarrassing.
You don't get cuddles.
I'm on holiday next week, so these guys are going to have to... I'm going to Lyme Regis, which is where Meryl Streep stood on the end of a big rock and got covered in water.
That's Lyme Regis in Dorset.
Lyme Regis in Dorset.
In Dorset.
French Lieutenant's Woman is the film you're...
Yes, I'm talking about the French Lieutenant's Woman. Yes.
Oh, I was worried you were talking about Mamma Mia. Okay.
No. We're not going to... We went to Greece for the honeymoon. This is like... I haven't been on a holiday away from Southampton, like a proper holiday, in about 10... probably only about 6 or 7 years, and this year I'm going on once to Greece and once to Lyme.
That's Regis. Married life for you, Nick.
It's very exciting.
It is. And Jane, what are you doing this week?
It all depends on whether or not I survive the cherry picker.
The cherry picker.
Yeah. Okay. There's two as well.
Two cherry pickers. Yeah. Look a little bit like robots, which I imagine is intimidating for you.
It is quite scary. I don't know how I'm going to do it. So I may not be here next week.
Okay, so it could just be me and John next week.
could yeah. be. Maybe That'd Scarlet be can
at least
do the first
be, At least it'll be short.
Scarlet, thanks.
What are you doing, Ryan? You up to anything interesting this week?
I'm just finishing off my holidays at the moment, so I've got three more days to enjoy just sitting around and lounging it up. And so then after that on Monday, I go back to work, so I'll be teaching the little kids all the good stuff. And, of course, I'll be spending some time writing a one-page script on our new character that launches this Sunday on Thought Balloons with 1L.blogspot.com and also writing a few articles for weeklycrisis.com. So I think that will keep me busy. And in a few hours, I'm going to have a mate pick me up, and I'm going to go into town and pick up my spinning order. And so I'm picking up a few things you've mentioned, as well as, sadly, I'm picking up a Deadpool comic. Picking up Deadpool Origins, because it's written by Dwayne Swierczynski.
Oh, right,
if you haven't
okay.
read any of Dwayne Swierczynski's work, the man is a phenomenal crime writer. So I'm going to pick up that, and I'll probably pick up Sweets as well. Thanks, Jane.
Yay.
Excellent. Yeah, and getting back in touch with Jane and blaming her if you don't enjoy
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's fine. You can do
that. I'll be asking her to refund me the money, definitely.
And I'll tell you what I thought about Music Box by Jennifer Love Hewitt. It may have explicit content in it, so.
Not the comic.
I was going to say, Jennifer Love Hewitt, explicit content? Yes, please.
The review.
We should save that for Jane Unleashed.
You should post it on janiecamp.com.
No.
Well, it's been lovely talking to you, Ryan.
Yeah.
You too, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That's you're very welcome.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure.
It's always nice when we have someone on who actually knows what they're talking about a little bit, isn't it?
It's nice. It's nice for you, Nick, isn't it? It saves you having to talk to Jane and I.
Oh, I love talking to you guys. You make me smile. Oh, I listened back to the podcast earlier tonight from last week, and fawning over James's baby actually sounds creepy when you hear it out loud. So hopefully I won't have done that tonight. Yes, thank you for joining us, Ryan, and thank you for listening to us, listener.
Thank you, listener.
Thank you, listener.
Thank you. We're going to go now. Bye.
Bye.
Man with frog eyes was standing at the door, and a little bald man with wingnut ears was waiting in the car. Well, Robin Moore passed the frog-eyed man as he walked into the bar, and Betty Coltrane, she jumped under her table. What's your pleasure? Asked the barman. He had a face like boiled meat. There's a go-go Betty Coltrane that I have come to see. But I ain't seen that girl around here for more than a week. And Betty Coltrane, she hid beneath the table. Well, then in came a sailor with mermaids tattooed on his arms, followed by the man with all wingnut ears who was waiting in the car. Well, Rabbit Maw sensed trouble, he'd seen it coming from afar, and Betty Coltrane, she gasped beneath the table. Oh, well, the sailor said, I'm looking for my wife, they call her Betty Coltrane. And the frog-eyed man said, that can't be, that's my wife's maiden name. And the man with a wingnut ear said, hey, I married her back in Spain. And Betty Coltrane crossed herself beneath the table. Well, Rabbit Maw stepped up and said, that woman is my wife. And he drew a silver pistol and a wicked bowie knife. And he shot the man with a wingnut ear straight between the eyes. And Betty Coltrane, she moaned under the table. Oh, well, the frog-eyed man jumped at Robin Moore, who stabbed him in the chest. As Mr. Frog-Eyes died, he said, Betty, you're the girl that I love best. And the sailor pulled the razor, Robin blasted into bits. And Betty, I know you're under the table. Well, a handful of fear, said Robin Moore, I do not want to hurt you. I'm not a woman, did I love me half as much as you. You're the blessed son of me, girl, and you are the sacred moon. And Betty shot his legs out from under the table. Rabbit Maw went down heavy with a crash upon the floor. And over to his thrashing body, Betty Coltrane, she did crawl. She packed the gun to the back of his head and pulled that trigger once more and threw his brains out all over the table. Sugar and I waved the smoke away. Said, I'm sorry, Mr. Barman, to leave your place this way. And she emptied out that wallet. She said, I collect my severance pay. Then she winked and threw a dollar on the table. Yeah.
Are you recording at your end? Is it all? Did you get my email, by the way?
I did, yep. I've just checked my configuration status and it's all aligned to what you'd said.
That all sounds like we're doing something seriously technical and cool, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm on the Enterprise.